Well, welcome back to our Old Testament survey. As you'll recall, we're going through the books of the Old Testament in the order in which they appear in the Hebrew Bible, and so we are currently in the third grouping of books known as the Writings. Tonight we're looking at the quintessential book of wisdom literature, the book of Proverbs. Now, before we begin, it might be helpful to define exactly what a proverb is. A proverb is a short, concise, and forcefully expressive saying that conveys some general truth or advice. Let me say that one more time. It is a short, concise, forceful expression or saying that conveys general truth or advice. So the proverbs are not ironclad guarantees. They are principles. They are wise advice. And proverbs, there are proverbs in many cultures throughout history. And so we think of the same, you know, like a Chinese proverb. There were proverbs in Egypt and other places. But the biblical proverbs that we have here in the book of Proverbs are inspired by God. So we know that the wisdom contained in them is true. And they are intended to teach us. A proverb is a teaching tool. It is something that instructs us in wise living. The Hebrew word for proverb means to rule in a superior way. So these sayings that we find in the book of Hebrews, these proverbs, are superior to the wisdom of the world. They're superior to the sayings of the wise that we might find in the ancient traditions of other nations. They come from God Himself. The proverbs then are giving us advice or superior instruction on how to live life wisely in a way that honors and pleases God. Now, the Proverbs are designed to help us set a pattern in our lives that will lead to righteous living, lead to lives of righteousness. They provide us with a worldview that helps us to make decisions. They're more than just knowledge. Wisdom is right knowledge rightly applied. So, it's taking what we know and what we have experienced and observed from the world and applying that so that we make wise choices and wise decisions. There are three different human authors to the book of Proverbs. Solomon, of course, who we're all familiar with, and then two men who are less well known, Agur and Lemuel. In Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1, we're told that the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. So Solomon is the primary author of the book of Proverbs. But what qualifies Solomon to write these things, to share with us these wisdom sayings? Well, Solomon was, of course, the son of David. He was the third king of Israel. There was Saul, and then David, and then Solomon. He built the temple. He built the wall around the city of Jerusalem. And according to 1 Kings, he was the wisest man who had ever lived. In 1 Kings chapter 3, God tells Solomon that he can ask for one thing that the Lord will do for him. And so he asks for wisdom and discernment. So we see in 1 Kings chapter 3, it says, "And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David, except that he sacrificed and burned incense at the high places. Now the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night and said, 'Ask, what shall I give you?' And Solomon said, 'You have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David, but I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. Your servant is in the midst of your people, whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?' The speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And then the Lord God said to him, 'Because you have asked this thing, and have not asked long life for yourself, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked for the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, Behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any like you arise after you. So God makes Solomon wise so that he can rule the people well and govern well. And so he gives him a wise and an understanding heart. Immediately, Solomon's wisdom is tested. And so we have the famous story of the two women who come. One's child has died, and the mother whose child died swapped it with the other mother's, and now they're disputing over whose son this really is. And so Solomon has to settle that dispute. And so his wisdom is tested. He is a wise ruler. And so he has written this book of Proverbs to pass down to us and preserve some of the wisdom of Solomon. The book of Proverbs is interesting as we begin to look at it because it seems pretty disjointed, even from one verse to the next sometimes. And so it would be easy to look at Proverbs and want to do like a topical study, just finding all the verses related to one particular subject and bringing them together, and there's some value in that. Another way to read Proverbs, my family growing up when I was a kid, we would read 5 Psalms and 1 Proverb each day, and that way we would make it through the entire book of Psalms and the entire book of Proverbs every month. So you could read one chapter in Proverbs each day and read the entire book in a month's time. But we can outline the book of Proverbs, even though it does seem a little scattered. There are some natural divisions that kind of give us a rough outline for the book. Chapter 1 through 9 instruct us in choosing wisdom and avoiding foolishness. And then chapter 10 through the middle of chapter 22 focus more on, now that we've chosen wisdom, on how to learn to live righteously. And then from the middle of chapter 22 through the end of chapter 24, the focus is on sustaining righteousness in the mature believer who has chosen wisdom. And then chapters 25 through 29 focus largely on becoming a wise leader or a wise ruler. And then chapter 30, which is where we get to the last two chapters, are other authors other than Solomon. Chapter 30 is focused largely on dealing with pride. And then chapter 31 is, of course, the Proverbs 31 woman and is on the subject of choosing a mate. We'll look at each of those sections in turn. Each of them is introduced with a little bit of a heading in the book of Proverbs to kind of show us that we're beginning a new section. So chapter 1 introduces us to the theme of the first section of the book, but also serves as an introduction to the entire book of Proverbs as a whole. So let's read the first 3 verses of Proverbs chapter 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. So we see the purpose of the book is to instruct us in wisdom, justice, good judgment, and equity, that we might know wisdom, not just know of it, not just have some knowledge of it, but to actually know it. So this is more than just head knowledge. This is a knowing that contains absolute certainty. We know what wisdom is. It's gained by experience. It's gained by instruction from those who have experienced things we have not. And so it means to learn it with your mind, but also to put it into practice in your life. So Proverbs is very practical in that way. The wisdom spoken of here is the skill to use what you know to produce something of value. This word that is translated as wisdom there in verse 2 is the same word that's used elsewhere in Scripture, particularly in Exodus and other places in the early parts of the Old Testament where the tabernacle is being constructed. And it speaks of the carpenters and the craftsmen who are constructing the tabernacle and the implements that will be used in the nation's worship. And it talks about their skill. It's the same word that's translated as wisdom here. It's also used to speak of the capabilities of administrators of the nation in 1 Kings 3 and the counselors who advise both King David and King Solomon. In Proverbs, the word is used to denote skillful living, So in other places, it's skillful craftsmanship. Here it is skillful living, or living rightly. Someone who lives skillfully in this way produces lasting value from their life. Their works will not be burned up on the day of judgment as the fools will, but will stand the test. And so we receive this instruction. And instruction is a word that is used three different ways throughout Scripture. It's used to refer to parental discipline of a child. It's used to refer to training or instruction in doctrine and righteousness. And it's used for verbal reproof or correction. So here in Proverbs, it's used all three of those ways. And since we see it in connection with wisdom, that means that it is instructing us in how to live life skillfully. The first purpose for which Proverbs was written then was to give us that skill to live life rightly. But then we continue in verse 4 that the Proverbs are intended to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. So the target audience is primarily those who are young and inexperienced, but there's something here for the wise and the learned as well. And these goals will be achieved by learning the Proverbs, the sayings of the wise, and understanding their sayings. In verse 6, to understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. And so when we set out to learn these things, what attitude must we bring with us as we seek to learn wisdom? Well, it's an attitude of humility before God, fearing Him as the great I Am and the all-knowing and powerful God. In verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. And so we'll see this fear of the Lord recur multiple times throughout Proverbs, coming up over and over again, about 14 times in these 31 chapters. And sometimes there are promises associated with the fear of the Lord. And this is a powerful saying and concept that I think has been softened a little bit in our modern understanding. Sometimes we think the fear of the Lord, and we've been told now, that simply means being respectful of God. And yet the word here actually is used elsewhere in the Old Testament to describe dread and terror, as well as awe and reverence. And so it combines all of those things. We're talking about a holy, holy, holy God who is all-powerful and all-knowing. So it captures aspects of both shrinking back in terror because of His wisdom, because of His knowledge, because of His power, but also drawing close to Him because of the beauty of His holiness. And so both of those concepts need to be held in tension. The fear of the Lord should leave us trembling before Him, humbled before Him, but eager to be close to Him at the same time. And so the first thing that we learn in our pursuit of wisdom here in the Proverbs is the value of tried and tested traditional wisdom. Look at verse 8. My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother. For they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. So throughout the Proverbs, we'll see this admonition repeated multiple times that we are to heed the wisdom of our parents, to heed the wisdom of previous generations. Young people particularly are often tempted to reject the wisdom of their elders and to take advice or to value the things that are valued by their peers. And we see the tragic results of that in Solomon's own son, Rehoboam, who took the throne after his father, refused to listen to wise counsel and instead listened to his peers, and the nation was ripped in two because of his foolishness. So if we are to seek wisdom, we must choose between traditional wisdom passed down to us from previous generations or the brash behavior of our contemporaries. We must choose between wisdom and foolishness. And so the Proverbs personifies both for us. If we look at verse 20 through 22, wisdom calls aloud outside. She raises her voice in the open squares. She cries out in the chief concourses. At the opening of the gates in the city, she speaks her words. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? For scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Throughout the book, wisdom and foolishness are contrasted, and both of them are pictured for us as women. Wisdom and foolishness are personified, the wise woman and the foolish woman. Wisdom promises great blessings to those who will listen to her voice and learn from her instruction, but foolishness leads to poverty, to lack, and ultimately to destruction. Look down at verse 32. For the turning away of the simple will slay them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But whoever listens to me will dwell safely and will be secure without fear of evil. So in choosing between wisdom and folly, we're really choosing between life and death. Wisdom will help us avoid the company of the wicked who sin with their mouths, with their actions, who delight in foolishness, sin, and death. Look at chapter 2, verse 10. When wisdom enters your heart and knowledge is pleasant to your soul, discretion will preserve you, understanding will keep you, to deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things, from those who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perversity of the wicked, whose ways are crooked and who are devious in their paths. And a recurring theme throughout the book is the avoidance of the immoral woman. In verse 16, to deliver you from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. For her house leads down to death and her paths to the dead. None who go to her return, nor do they regain the paths of life. So those who learn wisdom will come to trust God, and who is the source of all wisdom, and he will direct their way in life. Chapter 3, verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths. Wisdom teaches us to treat other people well. In chapter 3, verse 27, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in the power of your hand to do so. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back and tomorrow I will give it when you have it with you. Do not devise evil against your neighbor, for he dwells by you for safety's sake. Do not strive with a man without cause if he has done you no harm. And so over and over throughout the book of Proverbs, we see the wisdom of treating others well. James tells us that we all sin with our words. James says in James chapter 3, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. And so we know from the book of Job, which we looked at last week, that sometimes the wicked prosper and the righteous suffer. And so it is easy then to envy the wicked in their prosperity, and then to sin with our mouth as a result. And so we see in Proverbs 3:31, we are told, do not envy the oppressor and choose none of his ways. For the perverse person is an abomination to the Lord, but his secret counsel is with the upright. And then in chapter 4, we are told in verse 24, put away from you a deceitful mouth and put perverse lips far from you. And so these themes recur again and again throughout Proverbs of guarding our mouth, our words, what we say, and not envying the wicked. It teaches us ultimately to be like Christ. For Peter writes, for to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example, that you should follow his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. And so Proverbs teaches us to put away from you a deceitful mouth and put perverse lips far from you. So Proverbs is ultimately pointing us to the example of Christ. And since wisdom is from God, Jesus, of course, is full of wisdom and serves as the ultimate example of a life lived wisely. And we'll see that again later as we work our way through the book. Wisdom goes on to teach us that the immoral woman sins with her words in the ways that Proverbs is warning us to guard against. In chapter 5, verse 3, for the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil, but in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. So you can see that sin doesn't happen in isolation. the reformers used to speak about how if you've broken one commandment, you've broken them all. And we can see here that the immoral or adulterous woman is sinning with her mouth in the ways that Proverbs has warned us against. So wisdom guards us from sinning with our mouth. It guards us from sinning with the immoral woman. It warns us against laziness in chapter 6, verses 6 through 11. It warns us against keeping company with bad companions in chapter 6, verses 12 through 15. Wisdom personified takes as her students even those who are simple or unlearned. If we fast forward to chapter 8, look at verses 5 and 6. O you simple ones, understand prudence, and you fools, be of an understanding heart. Listen, for I will speak of excellent things, and from the opening of my lips will come right things. Wisdom instructs those who rule to embrace her and learn from her as well. In chapter 8, verse 15, by me kings reign and rulers decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, all the judges of the earth. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently will find me. Wisdom is able to provide great blessings to those that seek it because wisdom is from God and wisdom was with God in the beginning. Chapter 8, verse 22. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his way, before his works of old. I have been established from everlasting, from the beginning, before there was ever an earth. And of course, Christ in John 1:1 is described to us as having the Word who was with God and was God from the beginning. And so wisdom ultimately is pointing us towards wisdom personified in the person of Christ. God used wisdom to create all of the world. Chapter 8, verse 24, when there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills, I was brought forth. And it continues on through the remainder of the chapter. God used wisdom not only to create the world, but we're also told that all who find wisdom find a blessing, and those who spurn wisdom do so to their own destruction, in verse 35. For whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me wrongs his own soul, and all those who hate me love death. Well, how so? Well, if they ignore or spurn wisdom, they will do and become all of the things that wisdom warns us against and teaches us to guard against. They will become thieves, back in chapter 1, verses 10 through 19, adulterers in chapter 5, poor businessmen in chapter 6, they'll become lazy, liars, and proud, and divisive. Wisdom provides numerous blessings, and foolishness leads to destruction. Therefore, we should accept wisdom's invitation to fellowship with her and receive her instruction. In chapter 9, wisdom has built her house, she has hewn out her seven pillars. She has slaughtered her meat, she has mixed her wine, she has also furnished her table. She has sent out her maidens, she cries out from the highest places of the city. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. As for him who lacks understanding, she says to him, come, eat of my bread, and drink of the wine I have mixed. Forsake foolishness, and live, and go in the way of understanding. So there is a great feast of wisdom prepared for those that will learn from it. And once again, we see that the first step toward wisdom is to learn the fear of the Lord in chapter 9, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. So that is really the first section of the book of Proverbs, teaching us that we have a choice to make between wisdom and foolishness, between life and death. But having made that first step to choose wisdom and forsake foolishness, we now must learn to live righteously. Now, there's a lot of repetition of these proverbs, and these themes continue, but the section that begins here in chapter 10 and goes through the middle of chapter 2 has a particular focus, and we see this beginning in chapter 10, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon. So again, we have a heading letting us know there's a new section beginning. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is the grief of his mother. And so many themes are revisited in this section. We're instructed to work hard in verses 4 and 5. He who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a wise son. He who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame. Once again, we must learn to guard our mouths. For the wise will be quiet and receive instruction, but the fool babbles and talks and suffers for it. In verse 8, the wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. He who walks with integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will become known. He who winks with the eyes causes trouble, but a prating fool will fall. The mouth of the righteous is a well of life, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sins. Wisdom is found on the lips of him who has understanding, but a rod is for the back of him who is devoid of understanding. The wicked, the wicked do not act with integrity, but they are dishonest and greedy for gain. And we see this in chapter 11, verse 1. Dishonest scales are an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. The wise person knows that riches are not lasting and will not matter on the day of judgment. Chapter 11, verse 3, the integrity of the upright will guide them, but the perversity of the unfaithful will destroy him. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. The righteousness of the blameless will direct his way aright, but the wicked will fall by his own wickedness. A number of contrasts are presented to us. Wicked people do not treat other people well with their words, but the righteous use what they know for the good of others. Verse 9, the hypocrite with his mouth destroys his neighbor, but through knowledge the righteous will be delivered. When it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices, and when the wicked perish, there is jubilation. By the blessing of the upright, the city is exalted, but it is overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. The wicked withhold help from others in their selfishness, while the righteous person is generous to help other people. Chapter 11, verse 26, the people will curse him who withholds grain, but blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. The wicked trust in their own wealth, which will fail them in the end, while the righteous will flourish beyond this life. In verse 28, he who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like foliage. The wise person is one who is humble and will receive instruction. In chapter 12, verse 1, whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid. And the wise person loves instruction for various reasons, one of which is that he desires a godly spouse. In verse 4, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. The wise person receives instruction because he desires to work hard and excel. Verse 10, a righteous man regards the life of his animal, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel. He who tills his land will be satisfied with bread, but he who follows frivolity is devoid of understanding. The wise person seeks counsel. He guards his mouth and speaks only the truth. In verse 15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. A fool's wrath is known at once, but a prudent man covers shame. He who speaks truth declares righteousness, but a false witness deceit. There is one who speaks like the piercing of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health. The truthful lip shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. The wise person is careful about the company that he keeps. Chapter 12, verse 26, the righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray. And we're told in chapter 13, verse 1, that even children can be wise if they will listen to instruction. A wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. And so many of these themes we'll see continue to repeat themselves over and over again. The wise learns the value of hard work, truth, and integrity in chapter 13, verse 4, 5, and 11. The soul of a lazy man desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. A righteous man hates lying, but a wicked man is loathsome and comes to shame. Verse 11, wealth gained by dishonesty will diminish, but he who gathers by labor will increase. And when we learn the value of instruction and discipline, we will learn to truly love our children. In chapter 13, verse 24, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him will discipline him promptly. The wise person sees beyond material possessions and wealth and loves the poor. In chapter 14, verses 20 through 21, the poor man is hated even by his own neighbor, but the rich has many friends. He who despises his neighbor sins, but he who has mercy on the poor, happy is he. The wicked who oppress the poor are really opposing God who made all men. Chapter 14, verse 31. He who oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he who honors him has mercy on the needy. And again, wisdom teaches us to use our words carefully. In chapter 15, verse 1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, keeping watch on the evil and the good. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. Wisdom, ultimately, while teaching us to live life rightly, to pursue righteous living, ultimately wisdom is leading us beyond this life towards eternity. Chapter 15, verse 24. The way of life winds upward for the wise, that he may turn away from hell below. And once again, we see that the wise person welcomes correction, learns from life, while the foolish ignores it to his own destruction. And it begins with humility and the fear of the Lord. In chapter 5, verse 31, the ear that hears the rebukes of life will abide among the wise. He who disdains instruction despises his own soul, but he who heeds rebuke gets understanding. The fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom, and before honor is humility. So the wise person understands the sovereignty of God and the majesty of God and humbles himself before the Lord. Chapter 16, the preparations of the heart belong to man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. All the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirits. Commit your works to the Lord, and your thoughts shall be established. The Lord has made all for himself, yes, even the wicked for the day of doom. Everyone proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though they join forces, none will go unpunished. In mercy and truth, atonement is provided for iniquity, and by the fear of the Lord, one departs from evil. The wise person is humble before God in his wisdom, and humble enough to learn from others and not to isolate himself and cut himself off from those who are around him. We see that in Proverbs chapter 18, verse 1, a man who isolates himself seeks his own desire. He rages against all wise judgment. And social media is a great example of this next verse, chapter 18, verse 2. A fool has no delight in understanding, but in expressing his own heart. That pretty well sums up about 90% of what is on Facebook. Fools expressing themselves with no understanding, just wanting to say whatever it is that's in their mind. The wise person, however, doesn't say everything that comes into his head or react to every little thing in life. Chapter 17, verse 27, he who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of a calm spirit. A fool lets his mouth get him into all sorts of trouble. We see in chapter 18, verse 6, a fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calls for blows. A fool's mouth is his destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul. The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body. The fool speaks perverse things, we're told in chapter 19, verse 1. Better is the poor who walks in his integrity than one who is perverse in his lips and is a fool. The foolish person struggles against God. Chapter 19, verse 3, the foolishness of a man twists his way, and his heart frets against the Lord. Wisdom is for the young, but it is also for the aged. We're told in Proverbs 19, verse 20, listen to counsel and receive instruction that you may be wise in your latter days. A wise person never stops learning and increasing in wisdom. Verse 27, cease listening to instruction, my son, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. And then come a number of proverbs that warn against the temporary pleasures of sin and satisfaction at the expense of righteousness, which is everlasting. In Proverbs chapter 20, verse 1, wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise. And then in verse 3, it is honorable for a man to stop striving, since any fool can start a quarrel. So wine may taste good in the moment, but if you give yourself to it, it leads to destruction. A fool can start a quarrel, and that may feel good to say what you really think and to have it out with someone, but it causes contention. It is the realm of fools, not the wise man. Playing and pursuing leisure is more pleasurable in the short term than hard work, but in the long term it leaves you lacking. In verse 4, the lazy man will not plow because of winter. He will beg during harvest and have nothing. Deceiving someone in your business dealings may feel like you've won or pulled something over on someone, but in the end, it will ruin you. Chapter 20, verse 17, bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterward his mouth will be filled with gravel. Gossip. Gossip satisfies for a moment, but it is not. It's the realm of the fool and not the wise. In verse 19, he who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. And revenge, likewise, can feel sweet in the moment when we feel like we're getting somebody back or giving them what they deserve, but it pleases our sin nature, but it is not wise. Do not say, in verse 22, I will recompense evil. Wait for the Lord, and he will save you. So these are not the actions of a wise person. Pleasure may be enjoyable, but it is expensive and it is fleeting. Chapter 21, verse 17. He who loves pleasure will be a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not be rich. The wise person is looking for long-term benefits, not short-term pleasure. Chapter 21, verses 20 through 21. There is desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man squanders it. He who follows righteousness and mercy finds life, righteousness, and honor. So there are things that are of greater value to the wise than money. Chapter 22, verse 1, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. So the wise person seeks humility and the fear of the Lord. In chapter 22, verse 4, by humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. The wise person helps the poor and the needy. In verse 9, he who has a generous eye will be blessed, for he gives of his bread to the poor. So those who seek wisdom and instruction find, according to Proverbs 21, 21, life, righteousness, and honor from the Lord. But the next section of the book, which begins in the middle of chapter 22, begins with these words in verse 17. Incline your ear and hear the words of the wise. Apply your heart to my knowledge. For it is a pleasant thing if you keep them within you. Let them all be fixed upon your lips, so that your trust may be in the Lord. I have instructed you today, even you. To sustain wise living and righteousness, we must apply ourselves to keeping wisdom and instruction in our hearts. There are many who seem to follow the Lord for a time, and then they fall away. And so this section of the book of Proverbs seeks to address the one who would be wise continually and sustain that pattern of wise living for the long term. Chapter 22, verse 21, that I may make you know the certainty of the words of truth, that you may answer words of truth to those who send you. So we know the certainty of it, and so we cling to it and we don't walk away from it. There are several warnings that are given to us here. Chapter 22, verse 22. Do not rob the poor because he is poor, nor oppress the afflicted at the gate, for the Lord will plead their cause and plunder the soul of those who plunder them. So we see that sometimes there are things in this life that we know are not right, not righteous in the eyes of God, but we think, I can get away with that. There are no repercussions here and now. But that is a fool who is not looking long-term beyond the boundaries of this life to the fact that there is a judgment day coming and that the Lord will recompense those who behave in this way. And if we are going to be wise and sustain wise and righteous living throughout our life, then again, we are taught to be careful who we select as our friends. We have a tendency to become like those that we spend time with and to learn their behavior. Chapter 22, verse 24. Make no friendship with an angry man. With a furious man, do not go, lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your soul. Proverbs has throughout, over and over again, stressed the importance of diligence, industry, and skill in our careers. But now it warns us against devoting our lives fully to the pursuit of material wealth. In chapter 23, verses 4 and 5, do not overwork to be rich, because of your own understanding, cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. Discipline can be exhausting, disciplining ourselves and disciplining our children. The easier path at the moment is always to let things slide. But Proverbs tells us that we must persevere in correction, because that is the path of wisdom. In chapter 23, verse 13, do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. And the same is true of ourselves, not only in our discipline of our children, but we must discipline our own flesh and our own soul to the obedience of righteousness. It's much easier to let things slide. Well, I'm tired, I'm not going to deal with that right now. But there are long-term benefits of disciplining ourselves and disciplining our children. And even if the wicked do prosper, the wise person knows that there is more beyond this life and does not envy their temporary success. Chapter 23, verse 17. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day. For surely there is a hereafter, and your hope will not be cut off. And then more warnings follow about the dangers of the immoral woman in chapter 23, verses 26 through 28. There's an extended warning about the dangers of drunkenness there in chapter 23, beginning in verse 29. But gaining wisdom is a lifelong endeavor, and the results of gaining wisdom are a satisfied soul. Chapter 24, verses 3 and 4. Through wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. By knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. And then in verses 13 and 14, my son, eat honey because it is good, and the honeycomb which is sweet to your taste. So shall the knowledge of wisdom be to your soul. If you have found it, there is a prospect, and your hope will not be cut off. The wise do not rejoice in the downfall of others, even their enemies. Chapter 24, verse 17, do not rejoice when your enemy falls, and do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it, and it displease him, and he turn away his wrath from him. It displeases God if we take joy in someone else's downfall. And the wise person also knows that the day of judgment is coming, in which all men will be judged by God, and so it is not his place to rejoice now. Verse 19, do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the wicked, for there will be no prospect for the evil man. The lamp of the wicked will be put out. My son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not associate with those given to change, for their calamity will rise suddenly, and who knows the ruin those two can bring. Knowing this, the wise person not only does not rejoice in the downfall of his enemies, but rather he seeks their salvation. If we look back at chapter 24, verse 11, deliver those who are drawn toward death and hold back those stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, surely we did not know this, does not he who weighs the heart consider it? He who keeps your soul, does he not know it? And will he not render to each man according to his deeds? There is a day of judgment coming from the Lord, and the wise person seeks to exercise good judgment here and now, and to seek justice in a way that patterns itself after the Lord. Chapter 24, verse 23. These things also belong to the wise. It is not good to show partiality in judgment. He who says to the wicked, you are righteous, him the people will curse. Nations will abhor him. But those who rebuke the wicked will have delight, and a good blessing will come upon them. Honesty in chapter 24, verse 28, mercy in verse 29, and hard work in verses 30 through 34 mark the character of one who has learned wisdom and sustained it throughout his life. Beginning in chapter 25, we then have a new section focused on instructing those who would be wise leaders. Chapter 25, verse 1. These also are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. It is the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings is to search out a matter. So a wise and a righteous ruler or leader glories in seeking God's truth, even when he has to dig for it. As the heavens for height and the earth for depth, so the heart of kings is unsearchable. Take away the dross from silver, and it will go to the silversmith for jewelry. Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness. Do not exalt yourself in the presence of the king, and do not stand in the place of the great, for it is better that he say to you, "Come up here," than that you should be put lower in the presence of the prince whom your eyes have seen. So wise and righteous rulers do not entertain wicked or arrogant people. And these two principles, that they are seeking after God's truth and that they do not have any patience for wicked and arrogant people, these two principles will help shape the rest of the instructions that follow in this section for those that would be wise leaders. So what does maturity in wisdom and humility look like? Well, it means not exalting yourself, as we just read there in verses 6 and 7. It means settling disputes quickly and quietly without spreading rumors or making a big scene. Verse 8, do not go hastily to court, for what will you do in the end when your neighbor has put you to shame? Debate your case with your neighbor and do not disclose the secret to another, lest he who hears it expose your shame and your reputation be ruined. And the wise leader continues to keep a watch on his words, speaking that which is beneficial and refreshing to his hearers. Verse 11, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. Like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise rebuker to an obedient ear. Like the cold of snow in the time of harvest is a faithful messenger to those who send him, for he refreshes the soul of his masters. And the wise leader continues to help his enemies when they are in need, knowing that he is storing up rewards in heaven, while they may be only storing up wrath. Chapter 25, verse 21. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat, and if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For so you will heap coals of fire on his head, and the Lord will reward you. The wise leader chooses his companions carefully. We've seen this theme before in the Proverbs, but it is repeated once again. For those who are in leadership, they are to choose their companions carefully, and they are to promote worthy people rather than fools. Chapter 26, verse 1, as snow in summer and rain in harvest, so honor is not fitting for a fool. So a wise king would not honor a foolish person. In verse 8, like one who binds a stone in a sling is he who gives honor to a fool. In fact, a wise leader won't even employ a foolish person. Chapter 26, verse 6. He who sends a message by the hand of a fool cuts off his own feet and drinks violence. The fool is addicted to his own opinions and to his foolish ways. In verse 4, do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like him. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. So the fool will not hear understanding. He will wallow in his foolishness. And it tells us in verse 11, as a dog returns to his own vomit, so a fool repeats his folly. So there's no sense trying to change his mind or depending on him to do a task well. A wise leader also learns to avoid those who are gossips and those who speak lies and deceit. Gossip, of course, causes contention and strife. In verse 20, where there is no wood, the fire goes out. And where there is no talebearer, strife ceases. And the liar and the deceiver can't be trusted to speak the truth, which is a thing that a wise ruler is seeking above all else, as we saw back at the beginning of this section in chapter 25, verse 2. But now in chapter 26, verse 24, he who hates disguises it with his lips and lays up deceit within himself. When he speaks kindly, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone will have to roll it back on him, have it roll back on him. A lying tongue hates those who are crushed by it, and a flattering mouth works ruin. So the wise ruler seeks after truth and will not have anything to do with those who are liars and deceitful. A wise ruler seeks out the companionship of faithful friends who give wise counsel. In chapter 27, verse 6, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. And then in verse 9, ointment and perfume delight the heart, and the sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel. So good friends help us grow in wisdom, sharpening us as iron sharpens iron. In verse 17, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. Wise leaders are bold in righteousness and in wisdom, but not brash and boastful. Chapter 28, verse 1, the wicked flee when no one pursues, but the righteous are bold as a lion. And then in verse 13, he who covers his sins will not prosper, but whoever confesses and forsakes them will have mercy. So the wise leader is one who would be bold with wisdom and with righteousness, but would also be humble. There are several repeated proverbs in this section regarding diligence, integrity in our work, and generosity to the poor, which are all themes that we have seen before. But the wise leader needs these disciplines in his life and character qualities if he is going to lead well. The wise leader refuses bribes and leads with justice. We're told in chapter 29, verse 4, the king establishes the land by justice, but he who receives bribes overthrows it. And again, the wise leader does not listen to the voice of liars in chapter 29, verse 12. If a ruler pays attention to lies, all his servants become wicked. But rather, he seeks to continue after truth in chapter 29, verse 14. The king who judges the poor with truth, his throne will be established forever. It goes on to tell us that the wise leader pursues humility in verse 23, and that he knows in verse 25 that the fear of man brings a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord will be safe. So we can see from our own experience with political leaders in our nation how rare a thing it is for a leader to maintain integrity and rule wisely. Chapter 29, verse 2, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice, but when a wicked man rules, the people groan. Unfortunately, we end up doing a lot of groaning. But we know that though we may have wicked leaders in this life, in verse 26, it says, many seek the ruler's favor, but justice for a man comes from the Lord. So the wise person knows that justice ultimately will be done by the Lord, who is the judge of all the earth. As we move into chapter 30, it kind of stands alone and focuses on dealing with pride. We all have a tendency to trust our own intellect and to think that we have arrived, that we figured it out, that we have wisdom. We saw that with Job's friends who thought they knew better than he did. And so, like the fool that Proverbs has warned us about, we become wise in our own eyes. In chapter 30, Agur, our instructor, declares that he is not as wise as he would wish to be. The words of Agur, the son of Jekeh, his utterance, this man declared to Ithiel and Ucal, surely I am more stupid than any man and do not have the understanding of a man. I neither learned wisdom nor have knowledge of the Holy One. Who has ascended into heaven or descended? Who has gathered the wind in his fists? Who has bound the waters in a garment? Who has established all the ends of the earth? What is his name and what is his son's name, if you know? Now this reminds us of the ending of Job, where God questioned Job, reminding him that his wisdom and understanding were minuscule compared to the wisdom of God Almighty. And then Agur tells us in verse 5, every word of God is pure. He is a shield to those who put their trust in him. Do not add to his words, lest he rebuke you and you be found a liar. And so he asks two things from God, the truth and his daily bread. He says in verse 7, these two things I request of you, deprive me not before I die. Remove falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food allotted to me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. He then goes on to correct those who think highly of themselves, telling them that they are pure in their own eyes, lofty in their own eyes, and that they need to learn humility and wisdom. And then he offers several lists of wisdom. He lists those things that are never satisfied in verses 15 through 16. He gives us a list of things that are beyond comprehension in verses 18 through 19, a list of things that ought not to be in verses 21 through 23, a list of insignificant things that possess wisdom in verses 24 through 28, and finally a list of things that are naturally majestic in verses 29 through 31. Now, Agur told us at the beginning of the chapter that he was stupid, but it seems that he has a lot of wisdom to offer us. The point seems to be that we all need to check our egos and not think too highly of ourselves. In verse 32, he says, "If you have been foolish in exalting yourself, or if you have devised evil, put your hand on your mouth. For as the churning of the milk produces butter, and the wringing of the nose produces blood, so the forcing of wrath produces strife." So he teaches us in this chapter humility, not to think that we have it all figured out. And then finally, we come to Proverbs 31. Now, the chapter begins with instruction from a new teacher concerning sexual sin, alcohol, and justice for the poor. The instruction is given to us by a king. We don't know where he was king or when he was king, but these are the words of King Lemuel, the utterance which his mother taught him. So just as Proverbs has previously told us that the wise son learns from his parents, King Lemuel has learned from his mother who taught him this wisdom. And so she teaches him concerning sexual sin, alcohol, and the justice for the poor. But then beginning in verse 10, we have this portrait of the godly woman or the virtuous wife or the Proverbs 31 woman, as you might know her. There are 22 verses here which follow the acrostic pattern that we saw so often in the Psalms, each successive verse beginning with the next letter of the Hebrew alphabet, which is an indication that this section was probably meant to be memorized. If this is still part of what Lemuel's mother taught him, then it is the portrait of the kind of woman that she desired for her son, who would be king, to marry. Verses 10 and 12 are a sort of prologue describing this virtuous woman's value and character. "Who can find a virtuous wife, for her worth is far above rubies? The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. So she is valuable beyond price, a rare commodity. She's trustworthy and dependable, and she works with her husband and not against him." Verse 12, Lauren will tell you, is one of my favorite verses to quote at her when she's making me eat a vegetable or something I don't like. "Do me good and not evil all the days of your life." Verses 13 through 29 then give us the details of the portrait of this virtuous woman. In verses 13 through 19, we see that she works cheerfully and diligently. In verse 20, she is compassionate and shows mercy to the poor. In verses 21 through 23, her diligence allows her to care for others in her household. She demonstrates wisdom with her words in verse 26. She is obviously not lazy in verse 27. And she has raised children according to the wisdom that we have learned in previous chapters. She does not praise herself, but her children and her husband praise her, again, in keeping with what Proverbs has previously taught us. And so we can see that she is really demonstrating for us everything that Proverbs has taught us up to this point. And in the prologue at the end, we can see that not only are material wealth and pleasure fleeting things, but so also is physical beauty. Verse 30, "Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her own words praise her in the gates." So the Proverbs 31 woman here at the conclusion of the book stands in contrast to the adulterous and immoral woman pictured multiple times throughout the book of Proverbs. And she serves as an example to all of us, not just to the women. Throughout the book of Proverbs, wisdom has been personified for us as a woman. And so here she is at the end of the book of Proverbs, living a life marked by righteousness. But this picture is not one that we can't live up to. This woman is completely righteous in all that she does. And I'm sure that you've probably heard sermons preached on Mother's Day based on this passage in order to make all of the women feel inadequate that they have not lived up to this example. This is the ideal, the personification of wisdom. It's the picture of perfect righteousness. It's a target, it's a goal for us to aim at, but ultimately, this is a picture of law, not gospel. This is a picture of something that we cannot live up to unless we make a couple of connections to doctrines that we find in the New Testament, two of which are particularly helpful. First is that as wisdom is personified for us in the book of Proverbs, its ultimate purpose is to point us to Christ. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 1, "But we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block, to the Greeks foolishness. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God, and the wisdom of God." So Christ is the embodiment of the wisdom of God. All of Proverbs is ultimately about Him. He is the holy, righteous, and wise person. He lived all of this out perfectly, fulfilling all righteousness, living in the fear of the Lord, diligently accomplishing all of the work given to him by the Father, not reviling others with his words, even when he was mocked and abused. And so Christ is ultimately the one who fulfills all righteousness. Secondly, in union with him, Christ's people, his church, are pictured as his bride, who he makes righteous by his power. In Ephesians 5, we're instructed, "See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is." And then a few verses later, it tells us, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish." So because of Christ's wisdom and Christ's righteousness, his bride, the church, will be made righteous, sanctified completely, that we might walk in the way of wisdom forever. That's good news. That's gospel good news. If we look at Proverbs and the picture of wisdom that is presented to us apart from it pointing us to Jesus, then it becomes bad news because we cannot live up to the example that we find here. But if we let it point us to Christ, then it can teach us to live wisely in a way that pleases Him, trusting in Him for our sanctification and our righteousness. Let's pray.